Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Dee Dee Wilburn with the Office of the Attorney General. This is a rare case, in part because it is a direct appeal. The state of Texas chose to pursue a direct appeal in this case because the issues are paramount importance. Namely, can the state legislature decide how state funds in Texas will be spent? Certainly, the appropriation system should not be overturned lightly. And secondly, will we grant standing to a group who will not be harmed by the implementation of this law? In 1997, the Texas legislature passed Rider 14 for the appropriations bill. The rider merely says that no state funds shall be used to dispense prescription drugs to minors without parental consent. The rider does not in any way affect the substantive right of minors to consent to their own medical care in certain situations as provided for in the Human Resource Code.
In fact, as proposed, it doesn't affect anything, does it?
Well, I disagree to some extent. The rider accomplishes is it makes a statement, a bold statement by the state of Texas that we will not pay for prescription drugs for minors who choose not to communicate with their parents about these important issues.
But you're going to see that the money gets there just the same.
The Department of Health has begun the process of implementing a tracking system whereby they can assure that private entities such as Planned Parenthood will continue to receive funds. The funds travel will be federal funds rather than state funds. This is a way that the Department of Health can comply with the intent of the legislature while at the same time not affecting rights of people like Planned
Parenthood. Is there any validity to the theory that when the matching federal funds are received and deposited in the state treasury that they become state funds so that all the money is in effect state funds?
I believe there's no way
to segregate as the department.
Unfortunately, on the record before us, those facts are not fleshed out.
Well, that's a theory, legal theory. Do you agree or disagree?
Well, I disagree, Your Honor, in part because in cases such as this, federal funds that come down from the federal government are deposited in different places. For example, this case involves Title 10, Title 20, and Title 19. Title 19 is deposited with the NHIC, as far as I know. Again, these facts are unfortunately not in the record.
That's the insurance company.
That's correct. Title 10 funds go to Region 6 in Dallas. Title 20 goes to DHS. So this is how Department of Health is very confident saying that they could develop a tracking system. Because the funds are deposited in different places, it would be easier for the Department of Health to ensure that the state funds were not used.
But that still doesn't do away with the theory of correct, and regardless of where it's deposited, they're state funds. Because the state then administers where they go and how they go, isn't that correct?
That's correct. I believe in this case, the legislative history is somewhat dispositive. If you look, and it is attached to an exhibit, the history is very brief, but there is a conversation between Senators Janelle and Sibley where they make certain that federal funds will not be affected by the rider. So certainly, the legislators who passed
it. Question whether they're affected or not, what is your answer to whether the federal funds are going to state funds or not?
My answer is no. My answer is that they do not, and that we can discriminate between state funds and federal funds is based on no other reason than based on the source of the funding. And I believe that that's what the legislators intended when they did pass the
law. Well, what is the effect in this case of the evidence that's in the record of a letter from the federal government indicating that the state will lose all federal funding if it implements this rider?
The letter is from a regional health administrator. If you look at the letter clearly and the day on which it was written, the letter was premature. The letter was written in anticipation that Rider 14 would be fully implemented. By that I mean that agencies such as Planned Parenthood would not be reimbursed unless parental consent was indeed required. The letter says Rider 14 on its face, and then later it says if Rider 14 is fully implemented. It's clear that the gentleman who wrote the letter had no knowledge of the funding mechanism that the Department of Health intends.
What happens to Rider 14 if the federal government does, in fact, withdraw the $93 million?
What happens to Rider 14?
What's the effect of that?
Well, the effect would be huge, but it would be unintended. It's very clear.
Doesn't the statute automatically strike itself down if that were to happen?
I don't think it's automatic. I think that one interpretation would be that Texas is not complying with the federal regulations, and by not complying, then we've somehow chosen to opt out of participation. As you know, it's voluntary participation. have to voluntarily participate in this.
But the statute requires the state to do everything it can to maintain the maximum level of federal funding deficit. Wouldn't this appropriations bill violate that statute if in fact the federal government withdrew the $93 million?
I disagree that the statute requires the state to do everything it can to achieve maximum funding. It requires the state to comply with the regulations connected to the receipt of these federal funds, and it requires the state to provide medical services. And very clearly, this rider does not affect the provision of medical services. Those services will continue to be provided.
Well, what about the provision of the Human Resources Code that was at issue in this case? Does it not require the state to maximize funding in this area?
No, ma'am, there is nothing in the Human Resources Code that requires the state to spend state funds on prescription drugs for minors without consent.
I understand that, but the provisions of the Human Resources Code that Judge McCallum cited in his opinion?
Correct.
Do you disagree that those particular provisions of the statute require the state to maximize obtaining federal money and providing services?
I disagree that those statutes require the state to maximize federal funding. I disagree. I wholeheartedly agree that they do require the state to provide medical services, and that we will continue to do. Medical assistance, I believe, is the term in 32.024.
Well, let me ask a question about that. Is not Rider 14, but does the state have to, within the appropriations bill, appropriate funds to provide medical services provided by the Health and Resources Code? Do they have to fund it at all?
No, indeed, I'm glad you brought that up. If you look
carefully, if they don't have to fund it at all, is there anything that prohibits them from appropriations to appropriate funds to provide medical services provided by the Health and Resources Code? Do they have to fund it at all?
No, indeed, I'm glad you brought that up. If you look
carefully, if they don't have to fund it at all, is there anything that prohibits them from defunding part of it?
No, sir, and that's our argument. If you look carefully at the Human Resource Code, it very clearly says the Department of Health may administer and expend state funds that are appropriated. In other words, the legislature clearly stated that they don't have to appropriate funds for anything. If you look down at 32.021B, it gives the Department of Health the ability to enter into agreements with federal agencies to administer medical assistance when the Department of Health determines the agreements to be compatible and within the limits of appropriated funds. In other words, I believe that you're correct, and the legislature never forces or never intended for the Department of Health to be forced into administration.
And even if Judge McCown's worried about $200,000 being wasted, the appropriations bill could earmark certain funds to be wasted and certain funds not to be, at least according to the way the legislature determines it, obviously.
That's correct. It's not our job to question the wisdom of the legislature, rather only if what they've done is unconstitutional. And in this case, as you pointed out, there's nothing about the rider that conflicts with the Human Resource Code because medical assistance will continue to be provided.
Do we know yet what the reaction of the federal government is going to be to Rider 14, or has that question not yet been answered?
It has not yet been answered.
And if it's negative, what?
And if it's
negative,
then
what?
Well, then I believe that an agency such as Planned Parenthood at that time may have standing to
challenge the constitutionality.
Correct. But at this time, I do not believe they have standing. I believe that this suit is premature.
Whether this is constitutional or not depends upon what a director of a federal agency may decide about an option that is proposed here.
No, I believe that the rider will be constitutional no matter what. My comment only went to the standing of Planned Parenthood to challenge the rider. I do not believe that the decision of the federal government in any way is indicative of whether or not this rider is constitutional.
So if they do withhold funds, that would not make this rider unconstitutional.
Correct.
What then is the effect? I'm a little bit confused. In the joint stipulation that the parties entered in the trial court, in stipulation number 16, the statement is made effective September 1, 1997, Planned Parenthood will no longer be eligible to receive Medicaid funds for providing prescription medication to minors without consent. I'm afraid I don't understand the implication of that particular stipulation in light of what you just told us.
Okay. In the family planning strategy utilized in the state of Texas, there are four sources of funds: Title 10, Title 20, Title 19, and TANF, which is Welfare Reform Law. What that stipulation says is that Medicaid funds will not be used. state nor federal, no Medicaid funds are going to be used for reimbursement to entities like Planned Parenthood. Rather, Department of Health is going to pull other federal sources of funds. The other three funding sources other than Medicaid do not include any state funds at all, hence they are not at all affected by Rider 14. So there are three other funding sources from which TDH can pull to reimburse Planned Parenthood. You'll note in the record that in fiscal year 1996, which I believe were the only statistics available at the time, something like $267,000 were spent on prescription drugs for minors in the state of Texas. That's not distinguishing between who had parental consent and who did not. So we're talking about pulling roughly $267,000 from one of these three other sources.
Does this rider cover just regular prescription drugs in addition to oral contraceptives?
Yes, ma'am. All prescription drugs are covered.
So, Planned Parenthood or any physician could not give a prescription to a minor to treat anything without parental consent. Is that right?
No. Well, if
paid
you,
for by state.
If you were to just take a literal interpretation of the rider, that's probably one interpretation. However, the sole evidence in the record is that the Department of Health is going to institute a funding mechanism where doctors can still give prescription drugs to minors, and minors will still be, or, and then those doctors or people like Planned Parenthood will still continue to be reimbursed. They won't reimburse with state funds. The effect of the rider is focused on the funding source, not the ability of entities such as Planned Parenthood to continue to give drugs to minors.
But I mean, it does not only affect Planned Parenthood, it affects other doctors who treat minors on an emergency basis or whatever.
It only affects entities that would be reimbursed with state funds.
Well,
doctors who would be reimbursed with state funds would be affected, that's correct. But only affected in that the money they receive is going to come from a different source.
On the consumer, nobody's going to be affected. That's your proposal.
Correct. Well, but I add to that, nobody will be affected in one way, but in another way, Texas will still have made this bold statement. The rider is not effectless.
I wouldn't call it bold.
I'd like
maybe
to,
meek, I might call it, but
I'd like to focus a little bit more on the issue of standing. As you all are aware, it's fundamental that no court has jurisdiction to render an advisory opinion over a controversy that is not ripe. The burden was on Planned Parenthood to establish that it had standing in this case, and the sole testimony in the record before you is that Planned Parenthood will not be harmed by the implementation of Rider 14, and that's due to the Department of Health's stated intention of how they are going to apply the rider.
If this rider prevents the state from directly funding these prescriptions, how can the state indirectly fund them?
By relying on federal funds. The rider only precludes the use of state funds, funds that have their source in state dollars, not dollars that come from the federal government.
But if the state takes the funds to implement using federal funds, isn't that doing indirectly what they prohibit it from doing directly?
It would be. That's why we're not going to use state funds at all. No Medicaid dollars are going to be used at all. Only federal dollars will be used to reimburse entities such as Planned Parenthood to distribute the drugs.
I don't think we're communicating.
I'm sorry.
I thought you can't do indirectly what you are prohibited from doing directly.
No state funds are going to be used, directly or indirectly. No state funds will be used to reimburse someone for these prescription drugs.
Or to secure reimbursement from another source besides the state.
Correct.
The state's going to be able to do that with a telephone call.
The state is going to tap into other resources of federal dollars. And that's what I was referring to earlier, the fact that there are three other sources in the family planning strategy that come directly from the federal government.
If the state loses the federal funding ultimately when this plan is implemented, does Rider 14 then violate Article 3, Section 35 of the Texas Constitution? Is that an unintended consequence then of Rider 14 that would make it a violation of that provision?
No, I do not believe so. I believe if you read the Human Resource Code carefully, it speaks strictly about medical assistance and what assistance we're going to provide. The Department of Health is going to continue to provide the same level of assistance So if they lose the funding and the state of Texas comes up with the $93 million or whatever is lost to continue to provide the assistance, then that would save it from constitutional infirmity. That's our position.
What about 32001B that talks about to the extent that federal matching money is not available to the state, the conflicting provision of state law shall be inoperative? How do you get around that?
I'm sorry, I don't have that in front of me.
To the extent that federal matching money is not available to the state, the conflicting provision of state law shall be inoperative.
In this case, matching dollars is not an issue.
What if we lose the 93 million? If the 93 million is withdrawn or federal matching funds are withdrawn, what is the effect, that effect, what does that have on Rider A?
The matching funds, that only goes to Medicaid. So it wouldn't affect all of the $93 million. I understand your question, and I'm not trying to not answer it. I still think that the rider...
If the federal government says you're not complying and we are withdrawing the $93 million, doesn't that cause Rider H to violate 32.001C?
I don't know. And in part, it's because I haven't thought of this before, but our argument to that would be this. That's going to happen.
Well, that's what the trial court held. That's what's been briefed here. It's not in your brief. What's your response to that?
I don't believe, because this case doesn't involve matching funds at all, Medicaid is the only one, one of the four funding sources in this strategy.
What's the $93 million? What is that?
That's Title 10, Title 20.
What if that's withdrawn? Is that matching funds?
We don't believe, no, it's not matching funds. So I don't see how that can not be.
What are matching funds if the $93 million isn't?
Matching funds are roughly $5.4 million. That's also in the record.
What are those?
They're the money. That's the money that Texas puts up to pull down the matching funds in Medicaid. You have to remember that matching funds is a term and...
What's federal matching money?
That's the money we get from the federal government on a 1-to-$9 ratio.
So the $93 million is federal matching money?
No. Part of the $93 million is federal matching money. You are correct. And I can't do the math in my head right now. But if you think you have four funding sources, and this is in the joint stipulation of facts, the figure of state dollars that is put up in order to pull down federal matching funds, that's included in the record.
Quick question. In your argument, you said the same services are going to be provided even if the state funds were not used for prescription drugs. And because of that, you did not feel Rider 14 is unconstitutional. Well, can I ask you, actually, there will be less services provided because the state funds that will not be used for the medicine will require funds from other sources to be used for medicine, so there will be less dollars, total dollars, available for services. How does that not equate to less total dollars for services?
There's nothing in the record that identifies the source of the money that's going to be used to implement this system. There's nothing that identifies the loss that you're describing. The record is completely devoid of any evidence of harm suffered by the administrative costs or the moving around of funds. So I believe...
So for the purpose of the record, there is no demonstration that there's any loss of services.
Correct.
Because of this rider.
And that definitely supports our argument that Planned Parenthood is without standing because they failed to make that show.
Yeah.
I would ask that you supplement your brief on 32.001 because that was in their briefing and it's also in the trial court's opinion. I don't see it in their brief.
Thank you.
The
court is ready for your argument from the appellate.
May it please the court, it's David Duggins, and I'm proud to be here with Martha Dickey representing Planned Parenthood in this important case. I'd like to begin with a brief discussion of the standing issue and then move directly to the merits of why this fiscal shell game the state has proposed won't work. Before I even do that, though, I'd like to address your question about what's involved in this case and what is not involved in this case. We are dealing only with the family planning appropriation and only with respect to prescription drugs for minors. We are not, what that is prescription contraceptives and prescriptions used to treat sexually transmitted diseases. It does not include, for instance, in your example, emergency room treatment for a child hurt in a wreck. It does not include abortion or the drugs involved in an abortion, as amicus seems to think. We're dealing with contraceptives and sexually transmitted disease treatment.
Let me ask you a fundamental question with regards to standing, because I know you're going to address it. Do you concede the fact that in order for you to have standing, Planned Parenthood must have a liberty or property interest protected by the Constitution? And if the answer is yes, would you address what that liberty or property interest is that is at risk?
I don't think, Justice Gonzalez, that liberty or a liberty interest is implicated. What we have is an economic interest, a property interest, a contract interest. We contract with the state to get these funds. We contract with the federal government to get these funds. These contracts are in evidence in this case.
And if the state were to violate that contract, that's not only a breach of contract, but it's unconstitutional? Is that what you're arguing?
In this case, the constitutional violations are under the federal constitution's supremacy clause and the state's constitution unity and subject clause. We have standing to assert that because we sustain pecuniary damage to our economic interests. When
Isn't
we brought this law...
Isn't it premature until we know what the federal government's view of Rider 14 is? If the federal government says we don't have a problem within funds, that would all just go away.
Well, Your Honor, that's the sort of thing courts decide all the time. There is a great body of case law on this issue. What Medicaid requires, what Medicaid doesn't require, what states can do and what states cannot do. I don't think that it takes the withdrawal of the funds to create a controversy. We have plainly threatened with harm here, and a threat of harm, a concrete threat of harm, has always been sufficient.
But is it necessary for this court to conclude that the federal government will withdraw funds in order to find that this rider violates state law?
Violate state law?
Yes. Okay. Isn't that a fundamental underpinning?
No, it is not. This rider prohibits the fund, the use of state funds for a purpose that the general law of the state authorizes the department to use state funds for. This rider, therefore...
But isn't that permissive? It's not mandatory. The department may expend...
That's quite right. It is permissible. That permission, in this instance, is withdrawn by the rider. The rider, therefore, amends the general permission granted by the general law, and that cannot be done in a rider to an appropriations bill under this court's jurisprudence. You can't amend the general law with a rider.
Couldn't the rider have just withdrawn funding for these medical programs? Couldn't the rider have just said we're not going to appropriate any funds for matching grants for Medicaid?
Oh, certainly. The state, if this is an elective deal, the state doesn't have to participate in Medicaid or any of these other federal programs.
So why can't the state just pick and choose which parts of the program it's going to fund, subject to the risk that the federal government says that's not sufficient, and so in practice you've opted out?
Well, there are two answers to that question. The first one is that the state is not free to pick and choose under the case law, and I have some cases on that proposition. The second answer is that the state has not opted out. It is stipulated in this case that the state has elected to participate in each of these programs. The Human Resources Code directs the authority to maximize those federal funding sources.
But I thought you said by a rider it could choose to not fund these matching programs.
I'm sorry, I don't think that could be done by a rider, because that too would be a change in the general law of the state under the Human Resources Code.
But if you don't lose a dollar, you don't have standing right there, maybe they have modified the health and safety code, but if it doesn't hurt Planned Parenthood, then what standing do you have to raise?
To be perfectly frank with you, Your Honor, if this court could hold this funding scheme complied with the state law, and if this court could hold in some manner binding on the federal government that it complies with the federal statutes and regulations and nothing changes, we're perfectly content.
You don't object.
That's not the case, however.
If this is a bold statement, you don't object to that. Well, you may object to it, but it's up to the legislature to make
it. If all it is a bold statement, I have no business standing here. It's not all it is, though. It doesn't work. Let me explain why it doesn't work. Title 10 is the federal program that goes directly to family planning. All programs receiving any Title X funds, which includes the state of Texas through the Department of Health, are governed by Title X regulations, regardless of the other funding sources.
Just one clarifying question. With regards to all of these federal programs, Title X included, the state does not have to choose to participate. There's nothing mandatory about the state choosing to participate in the program.
That is accurate.
If the state does not want the rules or regulations or restrictions in the program, they say, we don't want to participate.
That's absolutely correct. And you forfeit the millions and billions of dollars of Medicaid funding.
Well, it's wise or unwise that the legislature has the power to do that.
That's correct.
All right.
That's correct. The legislature has that authority. Under the total budgeting concept, anybody getting Title X funds, including the state, is governed by the Title X regulations, regardless of the other funding sources. Those regulations prohibit parental consent requirements of this nature. You have to provide the services to whoever wants them on a confidential basis. The department says, well, that's okay. We're going to do that. We're still going to do these services. We're just not going to pay for them with state funds because we're not going to use any Medicaid funds. And Medicaid is the only one that involves state matching dollars. It doesn't work. The state's plan violates Title 19, the Medicaid statute, 42 U.S.C. 1396 D.A.4, which requires a state Medicaid plan to provide family planning services and supplies to everybody who meets the eligibility requirements for Medicaid, expressly including sexually active minors.
But your situation, your argument is that a rider can't be the mechanism that the state chooses to not fund these matching funds.
That is one of the arguments, that if you are going to make that kind of public policy decision for the state of Texas in the legislature, which it admittedly has the power to do, it needs to be done with debate, knowledge of the legislatures, and not slid in as a rider to an appropriations bill.
That may be the case, but the rider, the provision of the Texas Constitution that rider would violate is a provision on the unity and subject clause.
Yes, sir.
Correct? But if that were to apply to this rider, would it not apply to any rider that eliminated funding for any program that was otherwise mandated by statute, where the legislature may, when it appropriates funds, fund a particular program, then your view of the unity and subject clause in the Constitution would prohibit the legislature by rider from eliminating the funding for that kind of program as being inconsistent with the statute?
Yes, if you're going to repeal a general statute of the state, you need to do that with a general statute, not with a rider to an appropriation bill.
The lack of appropriations in it is in effect repealing the statute.
No, that's not what we're dealing with. It's rider, though. A simple inaction, we're not going to fund it this time, is not the same thing as having a rider that says, your permission to spend state funds given in the general statute is hereby withdrawn as to this one item.
But you do agree that there's no violation of the unity of subject clause of the state constitution when the state restricts the use of funds in a rider?
I don't think that I can necessarily agree with that statement under this court's jurisprudence. There is no statement in any case from this court to that effect.
You would agree that there's no affirmative obligation imposed in this rider upon any particular state official?
Yes.
It is on its face language that says state funds cannot be used to fund prescription medications for minors without parental consent.
And were there not these other general statutes requiring the maximization of federal funding and permitting the expenditures of state funds for that purpose, that in and of itself would not violate
that. I understand that. And that's the second aspect of analyzing the rider under the unity of subject provision. That's the first element. The case law indicates that the state can, by rider, restrict the use of state funds, provided that the second step is not violated.
I don't think I have quarrel with that proposition.
Now, suppose in the Appropriations Act, they simply put in there a line item for prescription drugs to minors without parental consent, zero. What would be wrong with that?
Under the Texas Constitution? I don't know that there would be anything wrong. Well, no, it would still have the same problems because it would still be, in effect, an amendment of the general statutes under the Human Resources Code because it has the impact of reducing the federal funding and losing those matching federal funds.
But the state wants to appropriate zero. You say they can't. If they choose to appropriate no money and to lose the federal funds, they can do that.
They can do that.
Despite the general statute.
I don't think they can do that with a rider to an appropriation bill.
But they can do it in the bill. They can just say zero. This program funds zero. Then they wouldn't get
in the face of the other statutes.
Yeah.
The health resource code. I don't think you could. And that is because it's a federal supremacy issue we're talking about. As long as the state elects to participate in these programs, it is bound by their rules.
But what you're saying is they can't unelect by appropriating zero.
Right.
They have to unelect by repealing.
If they're going to unelect, they need to repeal those statutes, they need to have a public debate, and they need to do it with knowledge of what they're doing.
If the trial court had not held this rider unconstitutional, how and when would we have known ultimately whether the government would withdraw funds or not?
That has never happened, so I cannot give you a specific answer to that question. The way that the courts have dealt with this on all of the cases is they have invalidated the state statutes that are inconsistent with the federal regulations and statutes. They have not said, okay, we're going to say this is an election not to participate in your money cut off. That has never happened yet because of the supremacy clause. In the absence of an unequivocal statement by the state that we don't want your money, we don't want your conditions, the courts have construed individual statutes in conflict with the federal regulations as violative of the supremacy clause and therefore invalid. That is what happened in the T.H. versus Jones case, for instance, which was a Utah case where the state imposed a parental consent for these same family planning dollars. The district court held that that was invalid because it was a new eligibility requirement for Medicaid funds other than those set out in the Medicaid statute themselves. The statute says you're going to do it for everybody who wants it and meets the eligibility for Medicaid, and you're going to do it for sexually active minors, and you're going to do it confidentially. The parental consent requirement there was a new requirement grafted on that federal statute. The courts unanimously have held that a state cannot engraft an eligibility requirement on the federal statute. That is the express holding, the statutory holding of T.H. versus Jones, which was expressly affirmed by the United States Supreme Court. That is what we're trying to do here with this scheme that the state is proposing. They're taking minors out of Medicaid for family planning. They're imposing a new eligibility requirement. If you're a minor, with or without parental consent, you're not going to be eligible for Medicaid. We're not going to use Medicaid funds because that means we have to match state funds. We're going to use some other pot of money to pay that. They've disenfranchised them from Medicaid. That is a new eligibility requirement, and that is invalid under the Supremacy Clause so long as the state of Texas elects to continue receiving these funds. There was a very similar funding scheme considered in a case that's not in the brief. It's Hearn versus Bay, and it's at 57 Fed Third 906. 10th Circuit case from 1995, cert denied by the Supreme Court. There, Colorado amended its constitution to prohibit the use of state funds to fund abortions in the limited context of the times that Medicaid covers abortions. That restriction was invalidated on the basis that if federal funds are available for a service mandated under Medicaid, and the state has elected to participate in Medicaid, then the state is required to provide the required matching funds for that service. Just as here, family planning services are mandated by Medicaid for minors, federal funds are available, and the state is required to provide its matching funds for those services. That holding is plainly applicable to our case by analogy, and the opinion in that case contains extensive legislative history, unmistakably showing the congressional intent that state matching funds needed to be provided for each Medicaid-eligible service.
So you disagree with the state's contention that no matching funds are implicated under their option B?
Well, the way they have phrased option B, no matching funds are implicated. I agree with that.
So again,
the way they have phrased option B, it is unconstitutional under the Supremacy Clause.
So again, it depends on option B. If option B were effective, it would not involve matching funds. It would not implicate matching funds.
Well, yeah, and there are other reasons why option B doesn't work. We have to go to Medicaid first for Medicaid-eligible clients. Our contracts require that. The Title 10 and the Title 20 regulations require that. If it's Medicaid-eligible, that is the primary funding source. This statute violates the federal statutes, the regulations under those federal statutes, under which Texas receives these huge sums of federal money. The legislative history on Rider 14, such as it is in the record, is clear that the legislature did not intend to impact the federal funding.
These other cases you refer to, like Hearn, did they come up before there was actually a cutoff of federal funds?
Yes. As I say, the federal
and
funds...
And in any of those situations, have the state attempted to provide another mechanism for funneling money to the affected claimant?
I don't believe so. Let me go back and tell you where we were when we filed this lawsuit. When we filed this lawsuit, we had the position of the Department of Health in writing, in evidence in their case, Exhibit 2, where they said to us, we are going to apply Rider 14 across the board. You will get no funds for prescription services to minors unless you can prove parental consent. We had, as Exhibit 3, the letter from the regional administrator of the federal agency saying that results in no federal funds. Now, it wasn't the only evidence in the trial court that they were going to do this option B. They also had an option A, which was, as they had told us in their letter, applying it across the board. It is only in their brief in this court for the first time that they have ever committed to this option B. It doesn't work for the reasons I've explained. It still violates the federal statutes. It still violates the Texas Constitution. But regardless of that, they cannot divest a court of jurisdiction. They cannot divest us of standing by conceding a legal issue in the Supreme Court. Clearly, we have standing in the district court, and just as clearly, we have standing here, for our funding is still in jeopardy.
The cases were determined that the state cannot make a different eligibility requirement. If I understand what you're saying, the effect of Rider 14 is to simply say when a child shows up who's eligible for Medicaid dollars, that the state has in effect made them ineligible for Medicaid dollars because they're a minor and what they're asking for is a prescription drug, which would otherwise require permission of their parent. And you're saying the state can't create an additional eligibility requirement for that child who would otherwise be eligible for Medicaid services. That's your point?
I think that's correct.
Now, one of the arguments, it seems to me, one of the positions here is, if that makes the state ineligible for Medicaid dollars from the federal government, what difference does it make to the court whether the court requires the state to eliminate that criteria or the court simply says, well, the state is free to make that choice, fully aware of the risk that it will lose Medicaid dollars, and the court allow the legislature to live with its decision and let them fix it if they want Medicaid dollars?
If you were faced with a statute, a general statute, passed after debate that says, the legislature hereby determines we're not going to participate in these federal programs, then perhaps you would be faced with the situation you addressed. What you were faced with in this case, under the facts of this case, though, is a stipulation that Texas has elected and continues to elect to participate in these programs. Statutes in the Human Resource Code that direct the department to maximize those federal funds, and legislative history of Rider 14 indicating it was not intended to impact the federal funding. So for the court to say, well, you should live with the consequence of your foolish choice and lose the funding, flies in the face of the evidence, the legislative history, and the general statutes of the state.
The only way the court gets to that is to determine that this rider somehow is violative of the Constitution. Somehow the legislature didn't have the authority to author this rider. Not that it conflicts with our statutes, but it didn't have the authority to author this rider.
Under either the state or the federal constitution, and so long as the state has elected to participate in these programs, it has not that authority under the federal constitution. And so long as this court's jurisprudence on the unity of the subject clause remains valid, it has not that authority by a rider to an appropriations bill.
Any other questions? Thank you.
I believe based on the counsel's comments, he has almost admitted that they don't have standing in this case. He had a conversation with you all about pecuniary loss. There's simply no evidence that Planned Parenthood is going to sustain any pecuniary damage as an effect of Rider 14.
Do you agree with him, though, that if there were such a loss that would flow from the contract that Planned Parenthood has with the state and the federal government?
No, I don't. And even if he were correct, then that sounds like a breach of contract case to me, which was not filed here.
Judge McCallum characterized, I think, in his opinion, the damage as being a loss of federal assistance, and I know you disagree with that. Your opponent indicated that there are contracts in the record which support the fact that there would be a pecuniary loss. Is that the case?
No, there are contracts in the record that show that Planned Parenthood receives these federal funds. It's a contract that says they're entitled to the reimbursements from Medicaid and these other dollars. But because there's no evidence in the record of any loss that's going to be sustained, there's a lot of talk and speculation about how much it would cost to implement Rider 14, and there's speculation that we may indeed at some time in the future lose some federal funding. It's all speculative and contingent, and there's nothing in the record that
I understand that, but if we assume there's a loss of federal funding, then does Planned Parenthood have standing as a result of this contract that it has with the state and the federal government?
Perhaps, but I think that again would only
that something would have to happen in the future.
Right, exactly.
What about Exhibit 2 that Council referred to, the letter? What's your response to that?
This is the letter that Dr. Patterson wrote, I believe.
He characterized it as a letter from the Department of Health to Planned Parenthood about how they were going to apply Rider 14 to the Planned Parenthood.
The letter, Your Honor, says that the Department of Health has contacted the federal government. We are currently awaiting a response to this inquiry. The department's position will be formulated after we see the response from our grantor agency. So again, this just shows that Planned Parenthood acted prematurely in relying in bringing the lawsuit prior to receiving.
Well, I thought there was a letter saying that they were going to enforce the law.
That they were going to enforce the
law.
It says, it is our opinion that Rider 14 would apply to all federal funds. The letter in no way states how Rider 14 is going to be applied by the Department of Health. This letter is written July the 16th of 1997. So again, September, 2 months prior to the effective date of the rider.
How do you respond to Mr. Duggan's argument that all this, that the state says this is simply a rider which takes away funding? And he says, but actually, it is an eligibility requirement which cases around the country have said the state cannot impose. In other words, when a child who's a minor comes up, they must apply through Medicaid if they are eligible for it first, and all the state has done is simply added, not that Medicaid doesn't apply, but that they've had this additional eligibility requirement of parental permission, and courts have fairly uniformly said the state cannot impose this additional criteria.
I have two responses. First, what the cases uniformly hold is that the state cannot withhold medical assistance. Again, medical assistance will not be withheld. Secondly, there is no requirement that Medicaid money be spent on prescription drugs for minors. I think that is very significant here. The United States Supreme Court in 1977, in the case of Beal versus Doe, said that Medicaid does not require that states provide funding for all medical treatments falling within the five categories of treatment that Medicaid
provides. But the state hadn't refused to provide Medicaid medicine for children.
That's right. It's only refusing to use Medicaid funding to reimburse them.
It only says we won't have Medicaid funding to reimburse children for medicine who haven't gotten their parents' permission.
Right. That's true.
So they are providing prescription service to children who have parents' permission.
Right. No, Your Honor, that's actually not what PDH is intended in this funding requirement, funding scheme under option B. No Medicaid fund is going to be used to give prescription drugs to anyone.
So to avoid the problem the rider creates, the department has just decided not to use Medicaid funds at all for services for children.
That is correct.
But that's not really what the rider does.
The rider says no state funds shall be used.
So the only way this becomes not a problem is by the department just deciding on its own not to use Medicaid funds, even though the legislature has appropriated funds for that purpose.
The department took it upon itself to read the rider, make sure that they were complying with the intent of the legislature, and at the same time safeguard the federal regulations that are currently in place.
Any other questions?
Thank you for your time.
That concludes the argument in the second case. The court will take another brief recess.
Oh, no.